Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to Game Buoy, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
This week, we're going to be talking about the Wii U again.
Probably not a big surprise.
No, it couldn't possibly be. But as you know, the Wii U came out, you know, about 2 weeks ago today. We have a lot to talk about. It's the beginning of a new console generation, just, you know, new games all around, new concepts, and there's a lot to say about that. If you're not particularly inclined toward Nintendo, first off, sorry about it. Second, rest assured, we will almost certainly be devoting many, many episodes to the Xbox 360 successor, and probably also the PlayStation 3 successor.
I don't know about that.
That having been said, as we have for the last few episodes, we just want to let you know we're still working on making our show sound better for you folks. Still, the dust should be starting to settle. We should be listenable. Thanks for keeping with us as we're under construction.
.gif.
And please reach out to us if you're having any issues with the way we sound now. We definitely want to sound good for you folks. On a similar note, one which I suspect we'll repeat as this episode goes on a bit, please be advised that our Twitter has a new name. We are now at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And that's actually spelled out GameBuoy, D-O-T-O-R-G.
GameBuoy, D-O-T-O-R-G.
If you already follow us, you needn't re-add us or anything, you should still be on board. If you don't follow us, I'm not entirely sure what you're waiting for. And with that having been said, I think it's about time for some follow-ups.
Let's do it!
So, first up on our list today, in Anarchy Reigns news, you know, we've been following this, we talked a little bit last episode about the European Day 1 limited edition that was going to be available for pre-order. Well, that's been announced for U.S. release now. Much like the European pack, it will include Bayonetta, as well as the DLC modes Mad Survival and Dogfight for multiplayer. The downside here, of course, is that in the U.S., this is going to be a GameStop exclusive.
Why is everything cool always a GameStop exclusive?
Yeah, seriously, right? Like, that's awful. We here at GameBuoy, we're not big fans of GameStop. You probably remember, we talked about that maybe 3 episodes ago.
We've talked about it in a couple episodes.
It's true. My breaking point was a few episodes ago, but... so that's cool. I'm happy Anarchy Reigns is coming to the U.S. I'm happy that Bayonetta as DLC to Anarchy Reigns is coming to the U.S. Bummed that I'll only be able to get her if I buy the game at GameStop.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. And you know, my experience with Bayonetta and GameStop is that GameStop gave me a clearly used copy. So I'm thinking I'm going to be picking this up on GameStop.com because there it will be more likely that it hasn't been played already.
Yeah, yeah. I hope that you get a nice, properly sealed copy because that is one of the things that GameStop does that it doesn't exactly upset me, but I don't really get why they do it. So.
Yeah. Super shady, but, you know, we'll be picking it up because, hello, Bayonetta swinging from a helicopter, shooting at other dudes, I am here for that.
And as we've said previously, I just want to do everything I can to support Platinum Games, so if I have to shop at GameStop to do that, I guess that's what I'll do.
Pretty much, yeah.
Next up, following up on the THQ financial saga... As of November 20th, THQ has been in talks with a mystery financial sponsor.
Ooh. No, but this is good news.
Yeah, they've reached a temporary agreement with their lender, Wells Fargo, whom we discussed they owed something like, what was it, $50 million?
Yeah, $50 million, $50,000.
$50,000 wouldn't be that much, though.
True.
So, we don't yet know who this mystery financial sponsor is, but that's good, you know? Let's keep our fingers crossed. Hopefully THQ can pull out of this. And yeah. I get the feeling we'll be talking about a little bit more THQ stuff today, so...
Yeah, definitely. There are kind of a lot of things going on with THQ in the news right now.
And last, but most certainly not least, Capcom has trademarked the name Fighters of Capcom. We know very little about this other than the fact that it has been trademarked for use in the U.S. and that it is, in fact, related to software. Early speculation has it pegged as a localized version of the Capcom/Gree crossover card battle game Capcom All-Stars with Everyone, which you may recall we discussed here when we also talked about what the hell is Gree.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that would be cool is if it's actually a new fighting franchise, but honestly, it's probably the Gree thing.
Yeah, you know, we already know they have Darkstalkers, something in the works. Theoretically, Capcom is working with Namco to work on the Tekken X Street Fighter part of their whole collaboration. So I don't see Capcom having another fighting game in development, but that would certainly be rad if they did. You know, they've a couple of times made efforts to make Capcom crossover fighting games just within just like almost what you would think of as a Capcom versus Capcom. And it would be cool if that actually came to fruition and we ended up with a cool ass, you know, proper Capcom fighting game.
Yeah, that'd be kind of neat.
I think that's it for our follow-ups. It might be time for
news. Oh my god, news.
This might be old news to all y'all by now, but our first story of the week, I heard about maybe 2 weeks ago now, and that is, of course, that Xbox Live is getting the karaoke channel. It's supposed to launch before the holiday with support for over 8,000 songs, as supported by the karaoke channel. You'll be paying for blocks of time, karaoke box style, and smart glass integration is promised but not detailed. I suspect we are all hoping that you can sort of queue up songs you want to play while someone else is currently singing in the style of an Asian karaoke box.
Yeah, that sounds great because I like going to karaoke box, but then, you know, the remote freezes or some bullshit like that, or they try and put you in a room that's too small. So if you can do this in the comfort of your own home, that's desirable.
Yeah, how great would that be? We'll get some lychee vodka and just fucking go nuts.
Yeah, pricing details have not been announced, obviously, but you will be paying with Microsoft points, so
yeah.
It's a rental, so, you know, hopefully it's competitively priced to make it an enjoyable thing.
You know, I have to say, I saw a lot of people online complaining about the whole paying for blocks of time thing. But to me, as someone who already goes to box-style karaoke joints, I'm used to paying, you know, $55 for 2 hours for just a small group of us.
Yeah, so I mean, if you pay, like, $10 for a two-hour block or something.
Or even 20. Or, I mean, hell, I don't want to give anyone ideas, but if I'm saving money by paying, you know, at home rather than going out and doing even up to, like, $30 for 2 hours, I'm still saving money and being able to get way drunker than I can get at a normal karaoke box.
Right. And the thing to consider is that if 2 hours was $30, I would hate to see what the 24 hours would cost.
Yeah, well, that almost certainly indicates that it won't be that much.
Yeah, I mean, and not to get into the business of running a karaoke box, but, I mean, you have to consider they have to pay for facilities, etc. This is just the licensing fee for karaoke channel and probably a little bit in Microsoft's pocket. So it'll probably be super accessible and super awesome.
Yeah. That.
And the lyrics will probably not be English. So that's a plus.
Right. Oh, it'd be cool if the smart glass integration also did lyrics, huh?
Yeah, that could be cool.
And for those of you achievement whores out there, the press release does indicate that, in fact, achievements will be included.
Nice.
Golf clap. Next up, a new Uncharted game has been announced for Vita. Well, one part of me is LOLing, and the other part is actually kind of excited. because this is Uncharted, The Fight for Fortune, the card game.
Nice.
I actually quite like card games, and I was disappointed in Golden Abyss. So this news to me is, it's kind of a win-win. I would be more unhappy with a sequel to Golden Abyss than I am with them doing something that is more compatible with the portable platform.
And it's priced at $4.99, so you ain't out too much if you throw down for it. It'll give you something to actually play if you have a Vita.
So that having been said, and by the by, this comes out on December 5th, so, or 4th, I'm sorry, so probably when you're listening to this, this will be out. Are you planning on picking this up, Slagkick?
Might as well. I mean, it'll give me an excuse to turn my Vita on. I always thought that the, I don't know why, anytime I see, like, these little card games come out, I think of the mini games in Final Fantasy games.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I'm looking at the screenshot here, and I'm a big fan of card games in general, but I was also looking, like, this looks a little fishy, like, I kind of feel like this looks like a Final Fantasy minigame.
That would be, side note, with Square Enix pushing into the iOS market so much.
Triple Triad, dog.
Yeah, I would pay for a Triple Triad game, even if it was priced at $11.99. Because, of course, Square Enix way overcharges for their mobile games.
This bitch.
Hashtag sarcasm.
Next up, though. So I'm really excited about this. The Last Story sold super well, and now it's only going to be $30.
Sweet!
It's worth mentioning, you know, that this new $30 package is a non-special edition. It is game-only. It doesn't come with the cool art book or original soundtrack that the first release came with. But, you know, it is only $29.99. And, even better, you know, I just sort of generically said that it sold super well, but XSEED quite specifically announced that it was the most successful game they've ever sold here.
That's great.
Yeah, well, it, you know, it's great news for this gem of a game. You know, one of the last Wii releases in the U.S., and a lot of people thought it was going to flop hard. So I'm stoked to see it do so well. Anytime a good JRPG does well, though, it's very exciting.
A JRPG released in the U.S. in itself is significant, I think.
Yeah. Really, it's, you know, it's sad that we're at that point, but it is what it is.
Yep. So that's pretty cool. I will pick that up, I'm sure, because I've been feeling in the mood for some RPG-ness. Dog.
RPG-ness. That just sounds funny.
Well, because it makes you think of penis.
Next up, literally the perfect story for this platform. Sega is deleting old Shining Force fan videos from YouTube, because apparently searching for Shining Arc, the name of the new PSP Shining game, wasn't returning any hits for the Shining Arc promotional video in the first 10 entries.
Okay.
That's like, that's super funny to me, like, to literally go and delete video fan videos of old Shining Force games because people can't find videos of the new Shining game. It's like, maybe you should be glad that Shining Force has such a big fandom that we all make fan videos.
Yeah, and I mean, not only are they just taking the video down, some YouTube channels have been completely shut down because, I mean, presumably they have lots of Shining Force content. That sucks.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. So, I mean, unfortunately, this story is still sort of developing-ish. It's developing insofar as this is a thing that's happening. No one's really reporting on it, but it's happening, and hopefully Sega stops and realizes that they're kind of being dicks right now.
Honestly, bros, promote your game a little better, you know. Tell all the gaming blogs and shit that you have a new trailer up or whatever, and maybe they'll get hits that way. I mean, shit, Kotaku would run a headline just for the fact that there was a video for it. So
yeah, and obviously I can't help but wonder if this isn't an unfortunate side effect of Sega cutting off costs. They probably don't want to put out press releases or do any of that that would cost them money. They just want to put up a video on YouTube and hope that people find it, maybe.
That kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's speculation. I have to believe there's something more sensible to this because otherwise, like, why are you doing this to us, Sega? You're finally getting back on your feet and letting us all love you again.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds kind of shady to me. But whatever. We'll have to see how it develops.
So that story is developing, and we'll probably bring you more information in a follow-up in the next week or two. And now, on to Final Fantasy Brigade. We mentioned this very, very, very briefly a forever ago, but it's finally been announced. Final Fantasy Airborne Brigade for iOS, coming to the US. This is an iOS Android social RPG. It's free to play, as I understand, and if you sign up early on the official site, you should get a free cloud summon when you start the game.
Cute.
Yeah. One thing I really like about this game is that it uses art assets in the same style as those of Theater Rhythm.
Yeah, it looks super cute from the screens that they've shown so far, so.
Yeah, I love that whole super cute style, so I'm stoked. I'll play it for sure. Anyone out there, be sure to tweet at us at GameBuoy.org.
At GameBuoy.org.
And let us know what your username is so that we can friend you and play with you.
Yeah, it looks really, really cute.
Now, onto something that excites me endlessly. This is perhaps also a follow-up, but I don't care. It deserves its own point. Crimson Shroud has finally been announced for its U.S. release on the 3DS eShop. This is, of course, the Yasumi Matsuno JRPG pen and paper sort of crossover game. It'll be out December 13th with a retail price on the eShop of $7.99.
Nice. And I feel like we didn't talk about Vagrant Story on our Underappreciated Gems episode, which, of course, was a Yasumi Matsuno title. Vagrant Story is just awesome sauce. So
yeah, I'm a huge fan of Vagrant Story. I guess I feel like it isn't underappreciated because so many people do love it. But by virtue of not being Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest, it is a bit obscure. So I think you're right. I just don't realize it because of the people I run with.
And I mean, he also did Final Fantasy Tactics.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Matsuno-san has done quite a few games.
Yeah, I mean, so this guy ain't fucking around. That's super exciting. And, yeah, that's good news that the Guild Zero One stuff is making its way over.
And last, but certainly not least, we want to talk a little bit about the Humble THQ bundle.
Yeah, very polarizing.
Very polarizing indeed. For those of you, of course, that are not on the internet all day every day, you may not have heard that through the Humble Bundle folks, THQ has presented a bundle that donates to Child's Play and the Red Cross. As with all Humble Bundles, you can choose how to divide your payment. The general internet commentary on this issue, however, seems to be in the vein of, the Humble Bundle sold out! With, you know, only a few, certainly among which we here at GameBuoy would count ourselves, pointing out that THQ is bankrupt, and, you know, honestly, if you're not super into THQ, you can even opt not to pay to them at all.
Yeah, it's just kind of sad. Because the thing is that, sure, you may not want to donate to THQ, but think about the fact that THQ has people working, trying to make their living. And if things don't go better for THQ, those people are going to be out of jobs.
Yeah, it's a really sad situation. To me, I mean, I think it really sucks that THQ is in this position in the first place. But then to see all of these people attacking the Humble Bundle folks and THQ, and, you know, a lot of people are donating, like, the $1 minimum in order to get all of these great games. It's like six games. While attacking THQ all the way, it's like, I appreciate that we're sort of conditioned to dislike these gigantic mega corporations, but THQ's not really one of those.
Yeah, and you know, John Graham, who is a co-founder of Humble Bundle, said, you know, he addressed the concerns about that they're selling out or whatever. He said, you know, no, we're not going to stop making Humble Indie Bundles. But, you know, they wanted to try something different, try offering some blockbuster content. I support that. Honestly, if I could choose between a Humble Bundle and just buying something on a Steam sale, and on my Humble Bundle I can name the price and have some go to charity, I'm going to do that, honestly.
Well, let me blow your mind for a minute. 1UP.com, a site that I would call highly credible. They have some great writers. They're very open-minded. They write some really just super impressive articles. They ran a story on this, and I'm going to read this headline. I shit you not. Humble Bundle loses what makes itself special with THQ Bundle.
Yeah. And of course, we're going to link this for you on GameBuoy.org.
Yeah, by all means, take a look at this yourself. Don't just take our word for it. But we here at GameBuoy, we disagree with that view. Ars Technica ran a story. Humble THQ Bundle threatens to ruin the brand's reputation.
Right. And I don't know. I honestly, even with the 1UP article, they could have just been a Kotaku and, like, bashed it, but I feel like they tried to at least intelligently argue their point.
Yeah, I guess my problem is that I think the point is flawed from the start.
Yeah.
I don't see how it's a defensible position to say, it's okay when these people sell us stuff cheap and donate to charity, but it's not okay when this larger group sells us stuff cheap and donates to charity.
You know, the biggest issue I had with this, and we're not trying to read this on our read of the week, you know, they have the right to have this viewpoint, but one of the things that I thought wasn't a point that really made any difference, says one of the major problems with the THQ bundle is the fact that it doesn't benefit developers, because, of course, THQ is a publisher, but why should that be any different, you know? THQ is publishing some pretty cool games.
Yeah, and you know, you also have to look at the studios that THQ owns. I mean, that they effectively run. THQ, it's easy to think of them just as a publisher, but they are the source of income for a lot of these really great studios right now. Without THQ, some of these great studios, the guys who made Darksiders, the guys who made, you know, Metro 2033, the guys who made Saints Row, which, I mean, obviously that IP will get saved, but the studio probably won't. These guys would all be out of a job, and all of that learned experience with these franchises that have gotten to a point now where all of these games, when new iterations come out, it's like an exciting must-play thing, that would all be lost. So when you say, oh, none of this money goes to the studio, it's only literally true. It's true in a sense, but it's not realistic. It's not the whole picture. The whole picture is really one where, because of THQ being in a healthy financial place, those studios are properly supported and doing better and achieving more.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it's pretty humble of THQ working with the Humble Bundle and being like, you know, we need help. We're going bankrupt.
We need help, but let's also help charities. That, to me, is something that's really special about this, is that it isn't just, oh, let's bail THQ out. It's let's throw some money at THQ and also throw money at Child's Play and the Red Cross.
Yeah, and I gave most of my money to THQ. That may make me sound like I value video games over philanthropy, but honestly, I want to support THQ here.
But, you know, we'll link the 1UP article and this Ars Technica article on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
So that you guys can read this. Maybe you'll come to a different place than us.
Yeah, if you think that we're just totally taking THQ's side and that you are vastly in disagreement with us, tweet at us
at
GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
With dot spelled D-O-T because you can't put a period in a Twitter handle.
With dot spelled D-O-T because you can't put a period in a Twitter handle.
Anyway, that should just about do it for our OMG news, right?
I think that's it for today. So, as we mentioned before, this week we are going to wrap up our discussion on the Wii U. We're going to discuss our impressions of the system now that we've had it for a couple of weeks, and discuss some of the news from the launch that has occurred so far. Slagkick, let me start off with this. How many hours have you played Wii U now?
How many hours have I played games on Wii U, or how many hours have I spent on Wii U?
Well, what's the difference? Let me ask that. What is the difference between those two questions for you?
And, you know, I'll talk about this a little later. I mean, unless you want to start off with it.
We can start off with it. There's no problem with that.
I'm using my Wii U a lot more as an entertainment device.
Oh, really?
I'm watching Netflix on it. I mean, I don't know. There's something about the fact that I can be watching something on Netflix, on TV, and then just switch it over to my gamepad if I want to lay in bed and watch it. And you know, people might just be like, oh, well, you could watch it on your iPad, too, you know, because I do have an iPad, which could run Netflix. But I don't know. I like using it a lot. I like the gamepad. But actually, most of my experience has been with Miiverse. I've spent more time on Miiverse than pretty much any game.
That's very interesting to me. What draws you to Miiverse?
I just think that I don't know if it's just the fact that the user base is really rad right now, but it's a very positive community. It seems like people are really, you know, trying to have a dialogue about games. I think what really impressed me was, like, a few days after launch, I was looking at the Zombie U community in Miiverse, and someone said something to the effect of that they weren't going to pick it up because of all the reviews on, you know, the major gaming sites were very critical of it, but that they had asked others on Miiverse if it was worth picking up, and people said, oh yeah, definitely, and they picked it up and loved it. So I mean, the fact that instead of relying on games journalism, which, as we point out on GameBuoy, it isn't always doing its job the way it should be, you know, instead of relying on reviews, they went to the community itself. And I mean, I just think that says a lot about the potential for Miiverse. And then, you know, of course, on a more superficial level, looking at people's drawings is super cute and stuff. But I mean, I think really the fact that people are trying to have a dialogue about what they're playing, I mean, it really feels like more of a community than PSN or Xbox Live ever has been.
Now, see, that is more or less exactly what I expected to hear from you. Not that we have talked about this, but because my experience has been so similar. I even saw some of these same posts about people sort of questioning IGN. I saw called out quite a bit.
I saw a great sketch that someone did on the Zombie U board about it was basically like, I don't like hard games, this game sucks, something to that effect. I was amused.
Yeah, it's just been really incredible to sort of engage the user base of Wii U players and not feel like I needed to wash my hands in bleach afterward.
Yeah, there was a great
Penny
strip
Arcade,
on Penny,
right?
Arcade, yes.
Yeah. And we'll link
that to you on GameBuoy.org.
It just really captured exactly how I feel. That
I loved that one because I was like, oh my god, that's exactly what I love about Miiverse.
And I've seen some people, largely people who are over-opinionated internet trolls, bemoaning the moderation in effect on Miiverse and how sort of iron-fisted the Nintendo moderators are. But I have to say, and I recognize that there are some ways in which this could be twisted to be an awful statement, but with regards to the experience of interacting with the community on my game console, I've come to realize that that level of control in the hands of a moderator is not necessarily a bad thing. I'm having a very positive experience, and if that means that people who write, oh, this game are dumb, this game are gay, if those things get banned and that person feels stifled, I almost feel like that's a price worth paying.
It's like, you know, sorry, next time why don't you try contributing something of value to the community?
And it's worth mentioning that I follow several people from some of the larger games journalism outlets and popular people from a few different video game forums. And these people have posted critical posts that have been reasonably well stated, or at least not crass and dirty awful, and these posts have been allowed to continue existing. So it's not like Nintendo is running a dictatorship where people cannot say anything negative about the games. It's that they have to actually be communicative and not vulgar or offensive. And I actually think that speaking sort of bluntly, that's that sort of critical criticism, constructive critical criticism, is useful. Like, I think that it's a good thing that people can communicate these things, these negative feelings about games, but that they're forced to do so in a well-thought-out way rather than just, this sucks.
I feel like a lot of people haven't really been mentioning this as we've seen Wii U media coverage. I think it's really more powerful than people quite realize. You know, I mean,
well,
as we said, Penny Arcade picked up on it, but, you know, Penny Arcade, those guys are just on point.
I think that was more true before the console came out than it is now.
Yeah, but I still
all of
feel
the
like
forums
it's not getting...
I frequent, it's gaining a lot of ground fire. Jeremy Parrish over at 1UP.com, their editor-in-chief, is tweeting about Miiverse every day.
Yeah, you know, and that brings up a good point. I was just going to mention something about him. He was talking on Twitter, because I follow him on Twitter, about how he's going to do a playthrough of New Super Mario Bros. U and post something on Miiverse after every level. And I think just the fact that you can engage in a game in that way is really neat and kind of unprecedented.
Yeah, so this is... Miiverse, I definitely think, was incredibly under-discussed, under-analyzed, under-considered. I don't even know what the appropriate way to describe it is, but Miiverse was not on anybody's radar, really, before Wii U hit. And now it's the feature that everyone is talking about. It's what everyone is going to look at when they get home from work. I think that for a lot of people, Miiverse is probably what they have used on their Wii U more than any games or anything.
Yeah, see, I felt kind of silly, but, I mean, you're saying that. And, I mean, yeah, there's only been a handful of games that I've maybe played more than the amount of time I've spent on Miiverse. Like, seriously, when I went and looked in my activity log, it was, like, Miiverse... No, I'm sorry, it was, like, Netflix was number one, Sonic... in All-Stars Racing Transformed was number two, and three was Miiverse. I played Miiverse, well, not played, but I've been on Miiverse more than I have on spent time on New Super Mario Bros. U.
Now, for me, that isn't strictly true. I have played New Super Mario Bros. U so much because I've already 100%ed
that game. Shall we officially just transition into talking about games?
Bitch, no, I ain't done talking about Miiverse. But Miiverse is a close second to New Super Mario Bros. U.
Yeah.
And that is over the several other games that I've picked up. I just, as much as I love them, and one of them is also Super Sonic Racing, however the fuck that full
Sonic
name is.
Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed.
Danica Patrick. It's Danica Patrick Racing. Good. You're quiet now. So, I love Danica Patrick Racing, but Miiverse is so compelling that I have played Miiverse, I've looked at Miiverse or whatever, more than the 13 hours I've put into Danica Patrick All-Stars Racing.
And I was saying that, like, oh, on a superficial note, the little doodles that people are making, but there are some seriously talented artists out there putting some beautiful gamepad artwork up on various communities, so...
Yeah, I've seen some really cool ones in the Ninja Gaiden community.
Oh, I've seen them all over. I've seen, some great Assassin's Creed ones. I've seen some great Darksiders stuff. Lots of great Mario and Nintendo Land stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just blows me away.
So, okay, now we can talk about the games.
Yeah, so we've been mentioning Mario U and Sonic and All-Stars Danica Patrick Super Racing Transformed Hyperpower Turbo Go. So why don't we... That would probably be the Japanese official title.
I hope that is the Japanese title for that game. Missing out on a huge opportunity.
Why don't we talk about those two first? Because it seems like those are the two that we've spent the most time with, aside from Miiverse and Netflix.
Oh, def. Well, Mario, New Super Mario Bros. U. I just have to say, if I'm being completely frank, I think it's the best 2D Mario platformer since Super Mario World.
Yeah, definitely.
I think...
Got some great level design.
Yeah, it's just incredible. I am continually impressed by it. And judging by the Miiverse posts of everyone I know, it seems like everyone more or less is in agreement on that point, that game, in terms of design, really just excelled and surpassed expectations.
And, I mean, it really does, it even makes nods back to Mario 3 and Super Mario World. I mean, the fact that the levels are named after food is very Mario World. And, I mean, yes, we did have Yoshi's in New Super Mario Bros. Wii, but, I mean... It really feels like...
But did we have baby Yoshis?
We did not have baby Yoshis. Oh my god. I was playing one level and I was carrying... I think it was... Was it the red baby Yoshi that eats fire?
There's a baby Yoshi that eats fire?
That's what he was doing for me. I was carrying him through the whole level.
Oh, he eats everything. And if you waggle your joystick, he gets super fat and flies you into the air.
No, that was a different colored one. This one...
That's red though, dog.
Okay, it might have been a yellow one or something. I'm not sure, but because, like I said, I haven't spent as much time with Mario U as you have, but I'm pretty sure that the baby Yoshis do different things, right?
Yeah, different colored baby Yoshis.
One of them,
I
was in a dark cave, and...
but they can all eat stuff.
Yes.
Oh, it was probably the yellow one. If it was dark cave, when you shake him, he lights the cavern up for you.
Oh, really? I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it sounds like there's lots of surprises to explore.
Oh, yeah. There's so much to the game. I'm actually disappointed that I have found everything now.
You 100%ed it with your partner.
Yeah, yeah. We played the shit out of that game. We couldn't stop. We couldn't get enough. We were playing it every day.
That's great.
We'd finish a level, and if we missed a secret in it, we would go right back in and find it. Like, it was so good.
Yeah, Captain Spike, for those of you who don't know, when he's playing a Super Mario 2D platformer game, he don't fuck around. I'm the type of person who I'll be like, okay, I'll go through and then come back later to get the extra star coins or whatever. But when I'm playing with Captain Spike, he's like, no, we're going to that secret exit.
We missed a dragon coin where you're going back. Yeah, that's super common. I'm not here to skip things.
And it was just surprising to me that a lot of people before the Wii U came out said that wasn't a must-have That didn't sell the console to them at launch. There are people who are holding off because they didn't find New Super Mario Bros. U compelling enough to buy at launch.
Well, you know, opinions and tastes are what they are, but
I personally don't agree. I think it's spectacular.
I think a lot of people are underselling the game, though. I really do think that it's a step above what has been done before it, and I think that once people realize that, that hopefully it will start catching on, because it's just a really incredible experience. It's definitely the highlight of the new Mario Brothers series so far.
Oh, yeah, and I for one, can't wait to see what's coming next. New Super Mario Brothers U2 with a soundtrack by Bono and the Edge.
Well, I think it'll be interesting, you know.
You didn't laugh at my U2 joke.
It wasn't funny. So Iwata-san had said that they were going to stick to the schedule of only doing one new Mario Brothers game per platform. So I wonder if the new Super Mario Brothers series is about to go into hibernation for 4 or 5 years.
I wonder, but honestly, I'd rather have them be able to focus on whatever's going to be the sequel to Galaxy. Well, not necessarily a sequel, but, you know, the spiritual
the
successor
follow-up
to Galaxy. In the 3D, what's going to be the new 3D Mario platformers, basically?
And, you know,
saying.
Iwata-san did confirm
Mario Universe is what a lot of people suspect.
I wouldn't be surprised. But Iwata-san did confirm that a 3D Mario, as well as Zelda, obviously, both for Wii U, are currently in development.
Oh, yeah, I mean, certainly.
And this is, of course, absolutely obvious to anyone with a brain. But it's somewhat comforting just to hear him say it.
Yeah, and you know, I'd rather have them, instead of oversaturating with, you know, more new Super Mario Brothers titles, I'd rather see the 3D Mario platformer. I'd rather see a Paper Mario game and that sort of thing. So I for one, think that, you know, even if we have to wait until the Wii U 2 or whatever's coming next, even if we have to wait, that's fine. But I mean, that said, even if I have to wait, I'm still excited for what comes next, because that's definitely a step forward.
Well, I do hope that there's DLC of some kind. You know, New Mario Brothers 2 for 3DS has some really cool DLC levels that
that's
you can
true.
Do
so,
in
I mean,
the
that's
coin
a way
boost
to keep
mode.
The game
yeah, as
alive.
Long as as long as the new levels are well designed, then bring it on.
Yeah.
I just want it to be good.
I'm just going to make a very quick side note, which, I mean, I guess isn't really a side note, because I just have to say, I love the gamepad. I had not touched one until launch night. And, you know, of course I was, like, kind of uncertain what it was going to be like. It's, like, I'm so surprised how comfortable it is to hold, to play with. I really like it, and the little side note that I want to make is that when you were talking about a Zelda game, which obviously we knew was in development, I just thought about the idea of playing a Zelda game on the gamepad without Waggle. I like Skyward Sword, Twilight Princess. I criticize a lot, but it wasn't a terrible game. I would love to see the next Zelda title not rely on Waggle, and I just thought, you know, if it's gamepad implemented, you know, we might see more of a traditional Ocarina, Majora's Mask, Wind Waker style of control, which I welcome.
Yeah, part of me wants that to happen so that you can have what you want, but the other part of me doesn't want to see Nintendo taking a step back. So, we'll see what they do.
Yeah, we don't want to spend too much time talking about Zelda. We could probably devote a whole episode to Zelda one day.
You could. I have maybe 3 minutes of things to say about Zelda. Basic bitch flop series, no one cares.
Ooh, troll harder, bro. So, anything else to say about New Super Mario Bros. U?
No, actually, do you want to talk about Danica Patrick Racing All-Stars?
Yeah, you know, what site were we looking at? Was it Kotaku that published that horrible review of it?
Yep.
We've mentioned Danica Patrick All-Stars on Game Buoy, like, probably as much as we've mentioned Final Fantasy or Bayonetta.
Yeah, I
which is weird because it's a very specific Sega title, and you own the original Sonic and Sega All-Stars, right?
Yes, I do.
And that wasn't a terrible game. It was a pretty competent kart racer.
Yeah, it was quite good.
But I'm seeing this criticism like from Kotaku and stuff saying that, oh, it's ripping off Mario Kart 7. It's like, so what? I think it's a really competent kart racer. I think that some of the track designs are super neat. The fact that you'll be going through one lap and you'll be racing on the road, but then, oh, it's the Skies of Arcadia level and the pirate ship just blew up that road, so now you've got to fly. I love that. There's so many great track designs, so many tracks based on franchises that you may think they haven't been capitalizing on, but I mean, just the fact that they are recognizing that these are parts of their library instead of just like ignoring them, I think that's significant.
Oh, definitely. You know, something that I have to say about the Mario Kart 7 comparison, before we get too far off of that, one of the supposed evolutions of gameplay in the Mario Kart series that 7 brought with it was that your kart would occasionally pop out a little hang glider or a little bubble for you to go underwater. But for the most part, these things did not change gameplay at all. You were just, oh, driving underwater, your controls are slightly more sluggish. Or, oh, you're in the air on your hang glider, you're going to be airborne for about 3 seconds before you land on the ground and be just, like, normal.
Yeah.
Sega Sonic All-Stars
Racing. Danica Patrick.
Edition. I was trying to get its name right because I was actually going to give it some credit right now.
Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed.
Thank you. The thing I really have to say about what it did was it took that concept and sort of took it to the next level.
You say it transformed it?
I would, as a matter of fact. It took the sort of core conceit from Diddy Kong Racing many years ago.
People who are choosing not to just bash it, who are actually choosing to try and discuss it in a valid way, say that it's more like a Diddy Kong Racing game than it is a Mario Kart, and I would agree.
Except with that game, with Diddy Kong Racing, you did have three vehicles styles that controlled all wildly different, but you chose which one you were going to use in a race. You didn't start as a hovercraft and then switch to an airplane. At least certainly not as I recall. So it's very different the way that Danica Patrick All-Star Racing does it.
Yeah, you know, and I think that
you sort of have to master how Sonic, we'll use it as an example, you have to master how Sonic handles in a kart and in an airplane and in the boat. You have to sort of learn all of them and utilize them all in a race if you want to win.
And I mean, and I think the fact that the influence that has on the track design is also really neat too. Like,
well, yeah, the track design really is just something else. I didn't know that Sega had people that could design tracks like that. It is I would say 9 out of 10. There's a lot of tracks in that game, but 9 out of 10 of them are super good.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Panzer Dragoon one that's awesome. I also really love the Shinobi stage a lot.
Shinobi.
We're not going to just sit here talking about our favorite tracks, but what is your favorite track, Captain Spike?
Okay, Radioland. How much do you love that Slagkick literally just said, we're not going to discuss our favorite tracks, but what's your favorite track?
I said we're not going to discuss in too much depth.
That having been said, my favorite is probably the Golden Axe level.
Oh, shit, the Golden Axe level is great.
Yeah, I was very happy when I saw the Golden Axe skeleton, the one that sort of holds your characters in its hands at the character select screen, just like as a part of a giant fiery mountain in the background. I was super pleased.
Yeah, and that's what our point is. You know, like Golden Axe, you wouldn't think that Sega would even really be paying attention to it, but no, they're throwing it in there. So
yeah, I was very impressed. You mentioned Darksiders 2. Let's move on.
I mentioned that in our Miiverse, little Miiverse discussion. I never played the first Darksiders, but you know, you had described it on the last episode as being like very like a darker kind of Zelda sort of game.
Yeah, I so definitely I think like, it oh, has
I'm
DNA def- in common.
I'm definitely here for that. And you know, I haven't spent too much time on it, but I like it so far. It reminds me in some ways of, and I mean this not really, but like the way that Death climbs and stuff makes me think of Assassin's Creed, kind of.
You know, I felt that sort of stuff reminded me of Soul Reaver, that's not bad. I'm playing on PC. I'm not playing on Wii U, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
But obviously the game is still similar enough that we can discuss. That's another one. I'm very impressed by that as a game. I wish I had gotten it on Wii U so I could play it on the gamepad.
Yeah, I've been playing it on the gamepad, just, you know, late at night, chilling in bed, playing Darksiders 2. Yeah, I think it seems really well put together. I'm trying to think of what else it reminds me of.
I was also surprised that it had some loot elements.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Like, I started out with just my scythe, but then, you know, I ended up getting a club, and then I got a better club. So
you were able to lock your car up.
Really? but no, I think it's really neat, and I actually, now I have Darksiders 1 for PC, thanks to the Humble THQ bundle, so, you know, maybe eventually I'll go back and play that. I've heard it's not as solid, but, you know.
I liked it a lot. I wouldn't describe it as solid as the second one, but it was still good.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to putting in more time. You know, it's just, it's very, very interesting. I like that sort of action game style. But, I mean, like you said, there's also, like, the loot element. So, it's interesting. I'm looking forward to spending more time with it.
Excellent. We have time to talk about one more game. So, what'll it be?
I'm trying to think if there's a game that we've both been playing. Oh, I know what we have to talk about, obviously. this is the obvious game that I'm surprised we haven't even mentioned yet, and you probably know what it is now. Nintendo Land.
Wah, wah.
Why are you making that noise? Nintendo Land's fantastic.
No, just because we neglected to mention it. Yeah, the actual
surprised.
Game is effing superb.
So, let's talk about Nintendo Land. You know, I picked up, you know, 7 games at launch, and that's probably more than any other launch console. And, you know, if you want to talk to me about the Wii U launch titles, shoot me a tweet at Slagkick on Twitter, and I'll be happy to talk to you about them. But we want to talk about Nintendo Land right now.
So let me ask you this. Nintendo Land. Bunch of mini games, so to speak. Which is your favorite? Let's start there.
Solo or group or overall?
I don't give a single F about
Luigi's
which.
Ghost Mansion.
Good. Because it's mine too. I cannot get enough of the asymmetrical gameplay of Luigi's Ghost Mansion.
Yeah, you know, on launch night, me and Captain Spike and a couple of our buddies, including Wicked from Nerdgasm Network, played a lot of Nintendo Land, and, you know, we tried out Animal Crossing Sweet Day, we tried out the Legend of Zelda Battle Quest, is that what it's called?
I think so.
Metroid 1, Mario Chase, which Mario Chase is also super cute and funny, but we just ended up spending hours playing Luigi's Ghost Mansion.
Literally hours.
And, yeah, like Captain Spike said, it's just the asymmetrical gameplay for that game just works. really well. Something that I think was really interesting is the way that, like, for example, if Captain Spike was controlling the ghost in Luigi's Ghost Mansion, and the rest of the players were trying to vacuum up the ghost, the rest of the players communicating in a way, like, talking like, oh, he's over in this corner, you know, like, just the communication in a multiplayer game is one that I haven't, that's an experience I haven't really had in a while, you know?
Yeah, it shared that competitive element, or, I'm sorry, that cooperative element shared similar DNA in style to almost like doing a dungeon in an MMO or something. Like, all four people are shouting out to each other where they're at and how to coordinate to take down this one human-controlled monster that's trying to hunt them.
Yeah, I mean, compare that to Mario Kart or something, where you are trying to pay attention to your little corner of the screen, and your interaction is maybe limited to something like, you fucker, you hit me with a blue shell, I'm gonna get you, asshole. Or something. But, you know, I think that it's significant how not only does it introduce that asymmetric element, but it also requires the people cooperating to work together in a way. And I mean, not every one of the not every one of the Nintendo Land games quite achieves that as successfully as Luigi's Ghost Mansion does. I would argue that the other one that is as successful is Mario Chase.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really think that overall, Nintendo Land, and I mean, I haven't spent as much time on it on my own personal Wii U console because it's so multiplayer focused that, you know, I want to play that when I'm around friends, not really by myself. But I just think that the different elements that they have presented, and a lot of people are saying, you know, this is kind of like testing grounds for elements to be introduced in full games, but...
Well, I've heard that said, you know, argued in a pretty convincing manner that these are game concepts and ideas that really, I think, you know, they certainly stand well on their own, but with a focus guided on them, I really think that pretty much all of these little games could be much bigger experiences down the line.
Yeah, although there's one article that, and I mean, I wouldn't even call it an article.
You're talking about the academic paper,
yeah, it's
right?
A straight-up academic essay on Gama Sutra, and we're going to link this to you on GameBuie.org. Please, if you have any interest in reading an academic article about the Wii U, please check this out, because it was just an amazing read. And, you know, just really unlike anything that has been out there in terms of media coverage since launch, or, I mean, even before launch, since it was announced. So,
It's really special, I'd say.
Yeah, and, you know, and we're not going to spend too much time talking about the media coverage, because you can go out there and find a plentitude of Wii U.
Is plentitude a word?
I think so.
Okay.
Should be. But, you know, we'll link a couple of articles, reviews that we think presented some different things. And just to give you some different perspectives, we got a couple of what we would call mainstream
media. Plentitude, noun, a full supply.
Thank you.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
All right, so, like, for example, we've got one that we'll link on GameBuie, and we're not going to talk about it in any depth, but there's a Wii U review from Entertainment Weekly, EW.com, and to be fair, the guy who wrote it has done a lot of games coverage before. He wrote a pretty good article back in the spring about kind of in defense of Mass Effect 3, but that said, you know, just the fact that we are seeing coverage on, like, Electronic Weekly, Entertainment Weekly, and the LA Times put out on their site, on one of their little pop culture sections, they put out, like, the must-have games in their opinion. So I think it's cool that, you know, we are seeing mainstream media picking up Wii U stories in a manner that is unlike the CNN article that we talked about on our first annual E3 blowout. As you'll remember, that was just a mess. The person who they had author it clearly didn't understand how to present this information to a wider audience. But I think it's cool that we're seeing a little bit of mainstream coverage that you know, is written competently. Anything you want to talk about as far as media coverage, very briefly?
No, you know, I think it's time to close this out. So let's wrap this up with your brief thoughts on overall who should be interested in Wii U right now as it stands.
I think anyone who is looking for a more compelling multiplayer experience than...
And you mean local multiplayer experience.
Yes, than traditional multiplayer games offer, need to definitely look into Wii U. I think anyone who is interested in participating in a really, really special sort of gaming community needs to look into this. If what I've talked about with the community interacting and referring to the other members of its community rather than just, you know, basing their decisions on a review, if that's something that you think is powerful like I do, you're going to want to pick up a Wii U, I would say.
And I have one more wrap-up question for you. Looking forward to the other two competitors of the next gen race, what feature of the Wii U would you like to see the Xbox successor and the PlayStation successor? What feature would you like to see them copy and expand upon?
That's a very difficult and multi-layered question, actually, because the first... I feel like I'm not really going to be answering your question because, first of all, they're most certainly, at this point, looking at what the Wii U is doing, and they are right now figuring out, well, shit, how are we going to copy that? I mean, obviously, Microsoft went and developed the Kinect after they saw what motion controls could do for gaming. Of course, PlayStation had the Move, which, I mean, I hear is all right, but, you know... And, you know, Microsoft's already done Smart Glass. So, first of all, I am 100% certain that they are going to be doing what they can to imitate the Wii U and try and present it as if it's better. You say, what do you want me to see them copy? I don't want to see them copy. Because
okay, well, rather than copy, what would you like to see them take and improve? Like,
on... improve on the Wii U or improve on their own consoles?
On the Wii U. Because certainly they're going to look at the Wii U and how it's successful, and they're going to say, let's take that feature but expand upon it.
See, that's the thing, though. I don't want to see them be like, how can we outdo Wii U? What I really want to see is three different experiences that can coexist on the market and each offer something different. I'm not interested in something that's going to be like, oh, like, I mean, because look, we already are starting to see some Smart Glass stuff going on, and I haven't personally spent time with Smart Glass, but I hear it's not that compelling.
Well, but again, so you wouldn't like to see them take the Miiverse concept to the next level?
I mean, I want to see, although, yes, I think that, you know, I think the things that I want to see are them improving on their own consoles, not how they can outdo the Wii. That's the thing. There's this whole state of mind that, oh, this console has to outdo this console. And, I mean, certainly, yes, it's a competitive marketplace, but, you know, clearly Nintendo's proving that by offering different gameplay experiences, by offering different, not just gameplay, like we've said, by offering different ways to interact with the console and with other gamers, is much more powerful than, oh, we've got a motion controlled with your body, super good looking graphics game. You know, I think that sort of mindset that we got to outdo the other, that's partially, I think, what killed the Dreamcast.
You know, I appreciate your rhetoric, but at the same time, I know for a fact that you buy the Just Dance games for 360 because you prefer for that kind of game the style of motion control that the Kinect offers over a Wiimote.
And that's because I think the Kinect's one of the best things, even though the Kinect's not perfect in its current state. I think the Kinect was a much more significant step in the right direction for Microsoft than the Move was for PlayStation.
And the Kinect being Microsoft's way of sort of taking motion control and expanding upon it, what would you like to see them do where they see the seed of the idea on the Wii U and think, let's put our own spin on it? That's really what I'm asking.
Well, I mean, for Microsoft, I mean, I really want them to see how they can take their tech and kind of change the way that gamers interact with the console and with other gamers. I think that we're really just seeing the beginning of what the Kinect could be capable of in that sort of technology. So, I mean, just the way that you interface with the game, wouldn't be lifting anything from Wii U, but, I mean, you know, Wii U...
Well, let's look at Miiverse as a baseline and say that Xbox had its own Miiverse where you could communicate in a moderated forum, let's say that you could use Kinect to do whole videos as Miiverse posts. Like, that would be cool.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess what I'm trying to think of are huge jumps. You're just thinking of, like...
Yeah, I'm thinking of taking something and taking it one step further.
The thing is, theoretically, you could have video posts with the Wii U. It does have a camera.
It has a camera on the controller. That's not... It's like a completely different deal than having a camera that records your entire room.
Okay, well...
I think from a functional standpoint, they're very different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a really, really good question, though. But like I said, I feel like I'm more interested in what each console could do. Well, I mean, sorry, what each company could do to offer a different experience from what's out there. I honestly don't know what Sony's angle is going to be.
I assume it's just going to be more polygons.
And that's like I said, what my biggest issue with Sony is that they seem least concerned of the big three. Well, I mean, the only three at this point, let's be real, aside from Ouya coming out soon. But, you know, Ouya is trying to do something different. It's like, hey, we want to be Android-based, open source, indie gaming, you know. And I think... just the mindset that Sony has of, you know, we need to be the biggest, baddest. I just don't find that compelling as a gamer when Nintendo is doing what they are with the Wii U and Microsoft's trying to take their Kinect technology and expand it. I mean, because like we've said, the Kinect as it is right now is just a shade of what it could be and should be. And so, you know... I think more so than taking any specific feature from the Wii U and saying, oh, we're going to one-up this, I just really want to see each company think about how they can change the way that gamers interact with their games, how they contribute to their community. I mean, yeah, certainly I would not mind seeing Miiverse sort of clones on the next systems, but I mean, it's going to be a clone, you know. I think there will definitely be an impact on the way that the next Xbox Live is presented. I think this is definitely like, and that's why we've said that I think Miiverse is one of the most significant things about the Wii U. I think that's going to really change the community aspect that we see on the newer consoles. But I mean, honestly, I guess I'm just taking it to too big a place, and so I want to hear your thoughts, because all I can think of is like, oh, well, we'll have Facebook integration on Xbox. You could see
Well, but that's already happened. And, you know, in fact, really? As far as I know...
See, honestly, I haven't been on Xbox Live in a long time, so...
As far as I know, I actually think with this most recent patch, they've actually removed that because people weren't using it.
Oh.
Because it had both Xbox and Twitter integration. And I don't think people
Facebook
were
and
using
Twitter
it.
Integration, I assume you mean.
Yeah, Facebook and Twitter.
You said Xbox and Twitter.
Oh, derp.
See, that's interesting, and I mean, I guess I just really didn't pay attention to that because I haven't really... I mean, I've played Xbox, but I haven't had a gold account in a couple months, so I just haven't really been paying attention, honestly. So yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just I'm taking it to a much bigger scale than you're thinking of, so I want to hear what your answer to your question
would be. Well, I mean, you know, I was really just looking for a general answer, and that's just that I'd like to see them take Miiverse and put their own spin on it.
So basically, what you're taking is that you want to see how Sony and Microsoft will do Miiverse.
Yeah, well, for example, you saw how they both adapted the Mii concept. Sony with their entire PlayStation Home thing.
Okay.
And Microsoft, you know, did their avatars. And, you know, to varying degrees of success. But it was interesting to see the direction that they took them. Sort of the games that were made to be centered around them. You sort of had games... On a related note, obviously not the same note, but you had their sports champions, Wii Sports clones, and I would be interested in seeing how they adapt the concept of a closed, moderated, well-behaved community that is centered on games and not all of this random stuff that inevitably just becomes a flame war, and see what arises when gamers are connected to gamers about games in an environment where they can't be dicks to each other. And I think that Microsoft is likely to put an interesting and cool spin on it. I don't know what it is. I was positing earlier that they'd use Kinect somehow, but certainly I don't know. Sony is the one that I'm a little more concerned about. But that's also why I think that they need to take an idea and spin it, because left to their own devices, they're just going to do
bigger,
more, better.
Honestly, even if they don't really innovate and just straight up copy, like basically like, oh, here, this is the PlayStation Move. It's like a Wiimote, but a little more accurate. Honestly, even if they just take something and pretty much straight up clone it, they'll be better off if they just ignore the Wii U's impact entirely, because I think it otherwise it's going to negatively affect them. But you know, like I said, I just really think that Nintendo is proving time and time again with the Wii U that you know the answer is not about how can you outdo each other. I just really want to see each company offering a compelling different experience. And, you know, I think that, like you said, with the things that Miiverse is doing right now, and I think Miiverse is only going to grow as more people become Wii U owners. And, you know, who knows what directions Nintendo's going to even take it in. from here. So, you know, I think really, yeah, I guess if I had to say one thing, would be the community aspect. I'd have to agree with you, but...
I think it's funny, you know, and I'm pretty sure I remarked on this at some point in the past that I was looking forward to how Nintendo handled a community, because Nintendo, they always... They're often late to the party with stuff.
Yeah, you know,
but
a lot of
always
people
take
were,
things in an interesting direction that no one else would have even thought to do.
And it's funny because,
and I feel like they've done that.
I'm sorry. A lot of people were very wary of what Miiverse and the Nintendo ID thing and how that was going to work, because Nintendo has always been, here's my friend code per game that you have to enter. It's 12 digits, and you have to go type it in this spot. But I think they did it right this time. And
you know, I don't just think they did it right, but with Miiverse and stuff, I actually think they exceeded the competition.
They did.
I think they created a new plateau that previously didn't really exist, and now they've raised the bar to that.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of got off onto a soapbox about the philosophy of game design or whatever, but I guess that in a way kind of follows up to the fact. Remember last week we were talking about what it means about the eighth generation of console gaming starting, and I think now that we've seen what Miiverse does, really allows us to look at what we hope to see the next generation. Well, I mean, not next generation. It's happening now. It started, so, you know, this new era of gaming, what it's going to offer. And, I mean, with the way that people are so connected to Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, all these social networks, you know, it seems like this was the totally obvious way for Nintendo to go. So, I mean, I think we're all very surprised, but it's like, of course, it makes total sense. This is really this is the direction that it made sense to go into, because this is the way that people are connecting to each other. So,
I think that's it. I think that's a good...
Yeah.
I think it's time to move on. We have said our piece. We are very pro Wii U. We are very impressed with what we have to see. And we are looking forward to seeing how this generation ships up.
Hopefully, you know, as we talked about a couple episodes back about, that might have even been very early on our In Defense of Nintendo discussion. And we had mentioned kind of the Wii U. We had mentioned where we thought the Wii might have fallen short. Hopefully, in another 5 years, hopefully Game Boy will still be around if you're still listening. Hopefully.
We'll be around whether they're listening or not.
And, you know, hopefully when we get to that point, we'll be able to say much more positive. Not that we had a lot of negative to say about the Wii, but, you know, hopefully we won't say, oh, you know, back in 2012 we were so excited about this, and this about the Wii U, and it just didn't really pan out the way we had hoped. So I'm very optimistic, but, you know, it'll be very interesting to see. And also, like we said, see how this is going to influence not only what the hardware is doing, but how it's going to influence game design. I think that this is really, I think this is really going to change the landscape of gaming more than people quite anticipated. You might disagree with me. I'm not saying you, Captain Spike, but you out there in Radioland might disagree with me, but I really strongly believe that. So I've said my piece and more. I've said multiple pieces at this point. So,
yeah, it's time to move on.
Yeah, let's move on. So, you know, we just said a bunch of positive things about gaming.
I'm ready to read a bitch to filth.
Girl, work.
What's it time for? Welcome to our Read of the Week. This week, to nobody's surprise, we are going to talk about Kotaku. We are going to talk about a little article that they ran
There was no November, point in this article even existing.
On November 19th. So the Wii U had been around for about 24 hours in people's hands. For about 24 hours. Maybe 30 hours. And this article is titled, 560 people are playing Black Ops 2 online on the Wii U right now. So this fucking article is basically bemoaning the fact that very few people are online playing Black Ops 2 on the Wii U on a... So this was a Monday night at 7 p.m. Well, motherfucker, people are at work and school and still coming home from that and eating dinner. Honestly,
I think Kotaku is based on the East Coast. That was probably 7:45 p.m. Eastern time.
Oh, huh. Yeah, that's even worse, because then it's like 4:45. Yeah,
and of course this was written by our buddy Totillo.
Steven Totillo.
This article is so short that... Like...
This article is so short that... How short is it?
We could basically read it to you right now.
We're not going to, because it would be a complete waste of our time. The very simple fact is...
It is like four paragraphs, and two of those paragraphs are one sentence each. No, actually, wait. Three of the four paragraphs are one sentence each. No, actually, wait. Two of the paragraphs are one... No. Okay.
Okay, it's like this. I'm sorry, but this is an embarrassment to games journalism.
Do you know
this
what I noticed about Kotaku? When you look at their little sidebar, they have a little number with like a little fiery flame thing. That's how many page hits they have, and then you hover over that. They're like, oh, this one had 30,000 page views, 2,000 visitors, and 638 comments.
Well, yeah, it's absolute sensationalist headline trolling for attention and hits.
And that's what we can't stand about Kotaku.
You look at this number, for example, this 560 people thing. It's not explicitly a lie, per se, but it's absolutely not what Kotaku is representing it to be.
And they're like, well, 800,000 people were playing on launch day of Black Ops 2 on 360.
Yeah, like, motherfucker, yeah, that's because like 40 million people have 360s.
I just want to read, I'm not going to read a ton of comments, but I want to read this, the very first comment that you see when you click this link over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
It's by Thunder025, must be a Pokemon fan. Isn't it a bit unfair to compare the number of people playing Call of Duty on 360, a 6-year-old console with a very good installed base, to the Wii U, a 2-days-old console?
And it's worth mentioning that while this was the second day of availability for the Wii U, it was still not, you know, a whole 2 days that it had even been out. Like, it's actually worse than this poor guy is saying, and this guy's trying to be fair to Kotaku, it looks like.
I have to read one more because it made me lol super hard. This commenter is named Commander Keen, and he or she said, so weird. I expected the Wii U's launch install base to rival the PS3/360s less than a week after its introduction. I mean, why would anyone with a PS3/360 that plays Call of Duty wait for the Wii's launch to pick up their blurp derps too? And even though they're... You know, they were clearly trolling, and there are legitimate reasons to wait until the launch of Wii U to play Blurp Derps 2. Like we've said, for everything we've heard, is that it's the best version of the game.
Yeah, I'm actually going to pick up Blurp Derps 2 tomorrow, so...
But That said, even though I kind of take issue with that last part of it, I liked the way that Commander Keen read them to filth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just have to point out really quickly, as we've been looking at some of these articles, because there are a lot of other horrible articles that we are not showing you during
there was like a waterfall of awful games journalism this past week.
And I'm noticing that the Kotaku commenters are getting a lot more vocal. And, you know, we like to say Kotaku... We like to pick on Kotaku a lot, because they're honestly the worst offender, but, you know, we're not trying to single them out. That said, the Kotaku commenters in particular are starting to kind of lash out more than I'm used to seeing. So, I mean, I think that's good. That's kind of what our point of reading these bitches to filth is all about. So, this verdict is what, Captain Spike? The verdict is...
Girl, that's a read! But in
lighter... The shade of it all!
In lighter news. And we're giving Kotaku a twofer this week. We will not always read two things, but Kotaku did write another one of their characteristically teensy-tiny articles, but, as a matter of fact, it's actually about something really important. They basically documented the Twitter hashtag One Reason Why. This was stories of women working in the games industry, as well as some of their male colleagues, about the rampant sexism and discrimination that they're facing in the games industry. And I have to say that while Kotaku had very little to say about it, they were very constructive and supportive. And honestly, I think they probably brought the issue to light to a lot of their commenters and people that, you know, maybe wouldn't have given it much thought before and would not have seen it on Twitter because they're not out there, you know, crusading for, you know, equality and, you know, feminism. And so that's a read. That is a good article. It is worth reading.
Yes, verdict read.
And I am very, very pleased with Kotaku for this article.
This hashtag, One Reason Why, has really picked up a lot of momentum lately. So, I mean, I think it's great that these women, and, you know, also, there's a couple tweets in here on this article that we'll link at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
That are tweets from men who, you know, because obviously feminism isn't just for females. But, you know, I think it's great that these women and men are speaking up and saying, look, this is a real problem. And, man, you know, months ago on one of our earlier episodes, we got started talking about gender issues. I think we'll really have a lot more to say as this develops more.
Yeah, I actually have a lot to talk about on the women in games topic. It's such a big topic that I couldn't possibly say it all in this review of this article.
Yeah, but you know, even though, like Captain Spike mentioned, it's a very very little short Kotaku article, and you know we usually tease them about the fact that their articles are like three paragraphs, but you know Luke Plunkett just said his piece. Didn't get all sensationalist about it. And honestly, I mean, to his defense, usually we say, oh, Kotaku and their three-paragraph articles, but the tweets here speak for themselves. So, I mean,
yeah,
I think in this case, very successful. So, verdict, read.
And, you know, as always, our goal here is not to be overly congratulatory, or overly harsh. We're just trying to hold the mainstream media and games journalism accountable, because ultimately we deserve good, unbiased, fair, honest coverage.
Yeah, and if they aren't going to do their job, people are just going to go on Miiverse and be like, sorry, we're not going to give you our page hits anymore.
Pretty much what's happening.
Yeah, you hear that, IGN?
So, I believe we have run our course, my friend.
Oh, yeah, we really have.
So, thank you for listening. As always, we welcome your feedback. If you have anything to say about anything you've heard tonight, please, by all means, reach out to us. We would love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings and reviews are always enormously helpful in that marketplace.
Yeah, and, you know, we understand that people listen to podcasts in many different ways. That said, you know, iTunes is still a very prominent community for podcasting, so please give us our first review.
We'd love your Facebook likes, and of course, we bring it up every 20 minutes. We love Twitter. You can tweet us at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Remember that you have to spell out D-O-T-O-R-G.
D-O-T-O-R-G. And you know, just a little tidbit. I was hoping that we'd be able to finally get that just at GameBuoy, but some punk in Missouri or whatever with no tweets still has it. I almost want to petition Twitter, but we always say GameBuoy.org, so we figured that's a easy thing for you to remember for our Twitter.
GameBuoy.org.
Facebook, we're on Facebook at Facebook.com/GameBuoy.
Facebook.com/GameBuoy.
And like we said, on the iTunes store, the podcast app, whatever way you access through your Apple software or device, just do a search for GameBuoy. That'll pop us right up.
And I just want to shout out real quick.
Can I actually make one more quick announcement in GameBuoy news?
After we've done our shout-outs, sure.
Fine. Okay, fine. We've talked about ourselves enough, I guess. Let's give our shout-outs.
You know, I just want to shout-out, of course, to Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I personally have taken basically each and every one of my cues. I am a thieving bitch. I basically have Rob Roberts to thank for my radio persona. Also, Koopa Club, if you like what we do and you want it a little more gay and definitely more Nintendo-oriented, check those guys out. They're great, and I love what they do. Mr. Slaggy?
Of course, we'd like to shout out to Nerdgasm Network, the wildest, usually 3 hours of shock jock video game radio that you'll ever come across. And if you're a World of Warcraft player, we can't recommend any two podcasts more than we can The Best Little Horde House in Azeroth, which is an OLR spinoff on the Voice of Geeks network. It's the place where they talk about World of Warcraft news, but never too seriously. And Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And last but not least, Video Game Outsiders. Another one like OLR. They've been out there 7 years running, winning podcast awards from the Xbox Live community. Just really a strong voice out there. And we'd also like to thank Zelda Reorchestrated for our new opening theme. So go check them out. There's a link on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Hopefully you like our new opening theme / closing theme.
Woohoo!
And speaking of GameBuoy.org, if you chose to tune in to us today by visiting GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
You might notice that we look a little different.
Did we lose weight?
Oh, girl. Work. We got a little facelift, you know, put a little Botox here and there. No, but seriously, we have just introduced a new layout. So give us some feedback. Let us know if it works for you. We think that you'll quite like it and find it that you'll find it quite a pleasant browsing experience. And as always, you will find all of our links and such there on GameBuoy.org.
Also, mobile site.
Yeah, you know, the mobile site's still a little under construction.gif, but optimized for your mobile browser now. So let us know how you like that. Of course, we are here for you out in Radio Land, and we want to know how we can serve you better.
All right, guys. With that, take care. Keep gaming. Keep thinking. And we'll see you next time, Space Cowboy. That's a read, girl.
No, it's always a read.